לפני שאנחנו מתחילים בשיחה, אני רוצה להודות לוורה שרב שהצטרפה אלינו והייתה מוכנה לדבר איתנו. הולכת להיות שיחה, אני יודע, לא פשוטה. לפני שאני מעביר את המקל לגל, אז אני רוצה שתי מספר הודעות. אז בתום השיחה עם וורה, אנחנו נברך יחד על תחילת השנה החדשה. אתם מוזמנים להכין לעצמכם תפוח ודבש לסוף, או משהו מתוק אחר, למרות המורכבות שתהיה בשיחה הזאת. אנחנו רוצים להיות אופטימיים לקראת השנה החדשה הבאה אלינו לטובה, ובזכות העשייה המשותפת, ובזכות הלקחים שאנחנו לומדים, והמציאות שאנחנו משפיעים עליה, אנחנו מאמינים שהשנה הבאה תהיה יותר טובה. אני רוצה להזכיר לכם שביום רביעי, 8/9, בשעה 9:15, נקיים מפגש זום עם אוסטריה ליוני, אמא של חיילת בטירונות בסיירים, שהבת שלה, יחד עם פלוגה שלמה, הוקפצה ב2:00 בלילה שבוע שעבר, על מנת לקבל זריקת קורונה, מה שנקרא. יושב ראש העמותה, עורך דין, תמיר תורגל, יקיים את השיחה איתה. וביום חמישי, ב9/9, ב9:15, אני אקיים סיור מוחות שני, עם רפאל בנדור, מייסד נוואר, ואפרת פנינגסון, סמנכ"לית פיתוח בינלאומית, על מנת לתת לכם כלים ורעיונות, איך אנחנו יכולים להמשיך ביחד ולהשפיע על המציאות. אני יודע שעוברת על כולנו תקופה מורכבת, קשה להיות אדם ער בימים אלו, אבל זו החובה שלנו. ביקשנו מוורה שרב, ניצולת שואה כילדה, והיום לוחמת זכויות אדם, לדבר איתנו. שרב יש את שיחה מרתקת, וכמו שרעות כתבה גם מרגשת, עם סיפור חיים מדהים, ויש לה תובנות רבות על המצב. לבקשתנו, גל שלו ינחה את המפגש. אז גל, תודה שהסכמת.
תודה לכם.
ותודה רבה לך, וורה. Thank you, וורה, על כל העשייה שלך והמוכנות לדבר איתנו. גל, בבקשה, המיקרופון שלך.
וורה, first of all, my name is Gal Shalev, and I really want to say that probably out of all the interviews I've ever done, this is the first time I'm actually kind of nervous. I've done a whole lot of research on you before, and especially now before the interview. So I know a lot about the way you think and the way you speak, which is incredible, very inspiring. And I'm so happy to have this conversation with you. Yeah. And so thank you for coming.
And thank you for inviting me. And even though it's, Shana Chadasha, but not very happy.
Can understand that, and I think that we're going to have a very emotional conversation, because we're both very emotional about what's happening. And this is where I'd like to kind of kick off maybe a contentious question, very polarizing at this time within Israel, within the community. And I would like to ask it straightforward so we can kind of build on top of that. Do you think that it's legitimate to compare what we're going through today with what you've gone through as a child? Meaning, if we can compare today's events and actually kind of like this rolling events slowly but surely to anything that has to do with the early 1930s coming up to 1940s.
You asked the question that I've been deliberating quite a bit about, that I've researched a great deal. And I am really very, very disturbed by those who try to silence anyone who raises legitimate concerns about the increasingly very disturbing parallels between the prelude to the Holocaust and the various restrictions and decrees that are being issued around the COVID virus. If you want, I can go through quite a few of them. The first thing, you see, the Holocaust was unique among genocides for one reason. What distinguished it was the pivotal role that the medical establishment had in every murderous aspect of the Holocaust. that distinction is no more, because today that's exactly what has happened. The medical establishment, public health, are making it possible. They're giving a veneer of legitimacy to the destruction of a civilized society where people are free to make decisions, where people demand that their government enact rules for their benefit. Instead, you're being dictated to, and it's against your better health. Now, Israel's latest COVID-19 data, and I sent a graph, it shows that Israel's record high vaccination rate is matched by Israel's high record of infection rate and death rate. The data shows that Israel's deaths have exponentially increased since the booster, since the third shot has been administered. Now, how is this huge infection rate possible in Israel, where the vast majority, after all, had been vaccinated, and we were told that this would prevent infection? It began with false claims. Claims that deluded the public to trust Pfizer and Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israeli Health Ministry. They promoted the Pfizer vaccine with a great deal of fanfare and unsupported promises. They claimed that the vaccine was 95%, had an efficacy of 95% to reduce COVID infections. What they were citing was relative risk reduction, which is meaningless. What they failed to release, to disclose to the public, is the absolute risk reduction. Now, when you look at that, and that is what counts, that's even what the FDA says that should be looked at. Not
1%?
Not even. Absolute reduction, yeah, is the only way to assess risk benefit. They avoided discussing it because, now get this, the AstraZeneca, which I know is not the one being used in Israel, but let's just, the four. AstraZeneca Oxford is 1%, 1.3%, okay? Moderna and NIH is 1.2%. Johnson & Johnson is 0.93%. And guess what? Pfizer, BioNTech, is the least effective in reducing risk. The rate is 0.84%. So when the health ministry announced recently that the COVID vaccine efficacy is down to 39%, guess what? They were still deluding the public. Now, a new analysis, an Israeli analysis of the data, was published in the journal Science last week. It showed that Israelis who have received two doses of the Pfizer vaccine are 6 to 13 times more likely to be infected with the Delta variant than the unvaccinated people who have previously recovered from COVID. Further, in an analysis comparing more than 32,000 medical records, the risk of developing symptoms of the disease was 27 times more likely among the vaccinated. The risk of hospitalization, which means severe illness, was 7 times higher in the vaccinated compared to those who had recovered. So in other words, naturally acquired immunity is far superior to the injections, to any of them. in reducing the risk of infection and the risk of death. Natural immunity also is long lasting. So your government is creating a perpetual cycle of COVID injections in order to ensure just one thing, the steady flow of booster shots. Your health minister even redefined unvaccinated. Now it includes those who only had two shots. They're now considered unvaccinated and they will soon lose their green pass privileges. Initially, the booster campaign, which I think was inaugurated August 1st, was limited to people 60 and older. But soon, very soon after, the minimum age dropped to 30. And for the fourth time in 1 month, Israel expanded the eligibility for booster shots. Prime Minister Bennett stated, "The third complementary vaccine works." I don't quite know what he means by complementary. 2 million Israelis have already been vaccinated with a third dose. This is a privilege that no other country has. Ooh. And then he says, of 79 Israelis who died last week, 78 had not had the third booster. I'd like to ask the Prime Minister why he neglected to tell us how many of the 79 who died had received rather two doses. And were there any unvaccinated among the dead? I mean, I think the Israeli public would like to know. Corona policies in Israel and elsewhere are driven by political profit-generating agendas. They have absolutely nothing to do with health, at least not with improving health. They have a lot to do with putting people's lives at risk. The policies have no medical or public health justification, and they're not backed by science. There are no data showing that COVID-19 booster shots reduce infections. There is no data to show that booster shots reduce transmission of the virus. There's no data that shows boosters reduce hospitalization. There's no data showing that boosters reduce death. Well, why in the world would citizens line up to get boosters? Lacking any legitimacy for his perpetual vaccination policy, the Prime Minister is resorting to shameless scare tactics. He warned the elderly, I would be included, I suppose, that they are in mortal danger if they don't get the third COVID vaccine shot. As of October 1st, the vaccine passport will expire, not only these 6 months after someone receives the second shot, but also 6 months after the third. And this is an indication that this these boosters are going to continue every 6 months. Maybe it'll be 5 months, 4 months, whatever they say. It has nothing to do with anything. It's putting the lives of the Israeli people at greater risk than others. The most shocking thing, though, the most shocking of all, is that the Israeli government is endangering the lives of children, the next generation. They're disregarding their own data. The data that I spoke about is Israeli data by the government, which means that everyone in the official government who tells you how safe it is and how important it is for you to get it is lying, and they know it. On August 30th, just as Israel's death rate was shooting up in tandem with the booster, the government added children aged 12 and up to the requirement for booster injections. And Bennett tried to entice children and adolescents. Dear young people, the vaccine will both protect your health and prevent you from missing all the fun of the summer vacation. Now, how cynical can you get? This is a leader. Israeli children are being sacrificed while their parents are shielding themselves with willful ignorance. That is a crime that they will regret. Willful ignorance is not what parents should be doing. Let me tell you a story. A story when I was a little girl, by then I was 6 and a half. And I had been rescued from the concentration camp as an orphan, even though my mother was alive, she remained in the camp. And I was one of a few hundred Jewish orphans who were essentially bartered for money. I don't quite know which organizations financed it. At any rate, one of the things that I learned as a little child when I was essentially between the concentration camp and getting to Israel before it was a state in 1944, I was a child in transit without parents, without anyone to take care of me. So I learned during that odyssey, I learned to trust strangers to help me, the kindness of strangers. And there were several kind strangers, Christians as well as Jews. But en route to the boat that would take us to Istanbul, this is from Romania. I was sent back to Romania. On the train ride to the boat, I befriended a family. And when we got to Constanza, that's the harbor city, there were three small boats. And one of the boats was assigned for the orphan children. And I was told to go on that boat. I refused. I absolutely refused. No matter what, I wasn't going. Everyone else boarded their assigned place and whatever boat. And I was all alone there, sitting on my little valise, crying, screaming. Absolutely no, I would not obey. Miraculously, I prevailed. And they let me go with the family that I wanted. Now I have to explain. I had a reason that I was so adamant. I trusted the family to take care of me because I knew I couldn't take care of myself. And I did not trust other children who would bully and whatever. I was little. I didn't grow very much in the camp the 3 years. Anyway, the first night out at sea, I was asleep. But a submarine torpedoed the boat with all the children.
Wow.
There were no survivors. I learned about it the next morning. Everyone was, you know, in shock. I didn't say one word, nothing. I didn't say a word. But I thought to myself, I was right. I was right to disobey. But I also had a pang of guilt because I was glad to be alive. Now, as a six-year-old, I shouldn't have had to experience that. But I'm telling this to the people of Israel. As parents, you have to disobey in order to protect your children. disobeying authority when they are arbitrary. And even with the boat, I mean, this is an arbitrary thing as to which one, just for bureaucratic, you know, going by the list. You don't eliminate, discard humanity. It's a human instinct. In fact, it's a mammalian instinct. A mammal would protect their children no matter what. And you're entrusting them to the government? What happened? What happened to the Israeli mentality? You know, when I finally got to Eretz Yisrael, which is how it was called then, my God, this was like really, I healed there. This was, they used to call it Eretz Yisrael Yafa. There's a reason for that. People were human with people. There were no billionaires. It was a community. I was embraced by a family. This was my mother's sister. We lived on a farm, an organic farm. That's why I'm healthy. I mean that. A little dirt is very healthy. What has happened now is global fear-mongering and propaganda. That's what this whole operation is. It's a global fear-mongering operation. Now, the objective of mass global vaccination is twofold. One is selective population reduction.
Eugenics?
Yeah, there's always eugenics, you know, because those who are doing, you know, nobody knows exactly who the clique are, but we know that there is a clique. This is global oligarchs, the multi-billionaires, who are, they're tired of the world the way it is. Now, let me just go through the twofold, right? So one is population reduction. And the other is that vaccination provides a gateway to digital passports. Vaccine passports were proposed by the European Commission in 2018, 20 months before COVID ever appeared. Yep, there's a plan. Digital passports are instruments of surveillance and control. That's their purpose. They are the pivotal instrument that facilitates a global, centralized, totalitarian surveillance state. The precursor of the digital passport is the IBM punch card identity tracking and surveillance technology that IBM provided to Hitler with the essential tracking surveillance weapon that facilitated the rapid implementation of the Holocaust. There's a direct parallel. And in fact, in New York State, former Governor Andrew Cuomo contracted with IBM for a digital passport, the Excelsior. Now, Primo Levi, who was an Italian Jewish chemist and author and a survivor of Auschwitz, he said, he warned, it happened, therefore it can happen again. It can happen everywhere. Israelis need to take note of that. It can happen everywhere.
Allow me, Vera, first of all, I had goosebumps a few times while you were speaking, and I'd really like to thank you again for your, just the way you speak is incredible, and your stories are mind-blowing almost. I'd like to take you back to something that you said, two things. One, before we get into the whole, you know, eugenics program, population deduction, reduction, I'd like to take you back a little bit when you were talking about the Israeli people kind of being asleep. And I'd like to play devil's advocate. Allow me. Because you've witnessed how it happened then, and you know how it was just a year and a half ago. Everybody always wondered, how did it happen? You know, how did people not notice? How did people not wake up? And for anybody who's able to kind of compare the two situations, now we understand. Me and Jacob speak about this a lot. Now we literally understand how it happened.
That's right.
And I'd like to ask you, so as playing devil's advocate, if these parents are doing what they're doing with their children out of fear, meaning they think that they're protecting their children, but not hurting them.
Yes.
How do you bring that? How do you bring them out of that fear-based mentality and bring them into the, you know, into that protection status?
I don't know. You know, it's a terrible thing, because what happened is, they're brainwashed. This is psychological conditioning. And that was the purpose of locking people up. And in Israel, you have more lockups than anybody. Every time they lock up, what do you think people are doing? They're glued to the television. And all they're listening is propaganda, 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 repeat, 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 repeat. And so they think, obviously, it must be right. Well, I'm sorry. Adults have to get out of that box and understand that, you know, the whole thing makes no sense when you really, and eventually, I don't know that that is, if there is a human, it's up in the air. But if humanity survives this and overcomes it, it's going to be some reckoning. There will have to be Nuremberg-style trials. Every one of the leaders in the, you know, in the world. Sorry.
I think it would need to be more effective than the Nuremberg first trials. I mean, how many people stood for trial? 48 people? I think this would need to be thousands.
But that document that came out of it, don't belittle.
Oh, 100%.
The Nuremberg Code is the strongest.
While you say that the Nuremberg Code is a very strong document, and I do believe that. I think it's probably one of the most founding documents, other than maybe, you know, the founding documents of the United States.
It's even better.
It's even better, but
because
it started...
addressed it. What one? Well, it actually goes together with some
exactly.
of the
That's
United
what I was
States
say.
Documents, in that it says no, the state is not supreme.
Exactly,
the human being is supreme. That's
but
what
look
it
at
does.
The disrespect.
It gives to each human being human rights. You know, and that is and it's beyond borders. It holds whether it's wartime or peacetime. It extended international law. They really had to create something out of it. And it's interesting, there were several Jews who were involved in, first of all, they didn't, international law at that time didn't even have anything about genocide and all that. And he came up with some of the terminology. And it's also, there was Dr. Moses in Germany, who had in 33 formulated ethical standards for medical research after some 93 children died from a vaccine in Germany. And he was so horrified by what happened there that he formulated ethical principles, and they were distributed. It's interesting, in 33, wow. But eventually, of course, the Nazis discarded all that, and he was sent to Theresienstadt, where he died. But his document was used
in the Nuremberg,
because he also had included the Hippocratic Oath and voluntary informed consent. So, you know, we have, look, that document is because of the ashes, okay? And I find that Israelis don't really understand how important this document is. I mean, I went through a few websites that are supposed to be the Helsinki Committee, all this. I couldn't even find Nuremberg, and I thought, my God. Yeah. No, history, and this is your own history, you know, and it's neglected, really. It's completely neglected. It's as if the only thing that mattered is reparations.
I have a few theories on that, and maybe we can get into that later. But what I would like to take you back to is the civil disobedience that you spoke of. So you spoke of it, how you kind of learned about it while you were a child, and you saw how important civil disobedience can be. It actually saved your life. And if we bring it back to now, I think maybe civil disobedience is maybe the only thing that could save us.
It's the only thing.
Right.
It's the only thing. And it's happening all in the world. It's not happening in Israel. Exactly. It's happening all over the world. I mean, I was interviewed a few days ago by Italian company, and you know, and they said the green passports at work finally got the Italians up in arms. That's it. They don't want it.
Yeah, and here it's exactly the way.
I, just as a very parenthetical, it's almost amusing, but I'm sort of, for the first time ever since I left Romania, have I ever thought of it in a positive way? But Romania dropped everything. No vaccination, no masks, no distancing, no nothing. They're selling some of the inventory to Denmark and others. They've had enough. The Romanians do not want to be vaccinated. End of story.
Yeah.
Well, if a few more countries do that, that's the way to stop them. We have to understand that while all this has been going on, really, civil disobedience could have blocked the whole thing. We are 7.8 billion. They are maybe 1,000 at most. It's absurd that we should be terrorized by them. Part of the thing, though, is, and Israelis are very much in that, the love affair.
That's one of my theories.
The love affair. That is what has led to people not believing. It's I compare it to, imagine a little child, a little toddler, loves its teddy bear, right? How could that teddy bear, you know, bite it or cause it ill? That's the way they're looking at this. This couldn't do, oh no. This is a two-way highway, and most of the information was being taken from you without knowing it.
Not only that, it's the one thing that's dumbing down society, right? So one of my theories is that the, you know, the TikToks, the Big Brother shows, it all got us used to being in this little unreal kind of too well. You know the phrase, hard times create strong men create good times create weak men create bad times, and that's a very it really resonates with me, because I feel like we've had too much of a good time. And men are not.
It's instant gratification. You know, oh, it's so convenient. Oh, it's so this and that. People just threw away their thinking caps. Where is, you know, it really doesn't take a genius. I mean, I happen to be able to ascertain connections, you know, to connect the dots. But there are so many people who are, you know, brilliant, who can, all this technology, they can do all that. How could they, even those who are immersed in it, I mean, so many Israelis are in tech, and they don't, nothing. They don't want to hear. They have been so conditioned to not go where you're not supposed to. To me, that's the first thing I want to go to, because what's there to hide, right?
Exactly.
No, in other words, the educational system, I gather, throughout the Western world has destroyed people being able to critically think and evaluate something for themselves. They're going, it's all the crowd. Whatever the crowd goes, you go to. That's not being an adult. I'm sorry. It's one thing when teenagers are, you know, like that, but it's carried over to the adult generation. And that's outrageous. I mean, there's no, who will protect the children if the parents abdicate their responsibility?
Well, they've done a great job in, because you kind of alluded to this, where people are brainwashed, but they're not just brainwashed. What they've done, which is like an extra, like the kind of like the cherry on top, is they dehumanized us, the people who are trying to bring the truth, right?
That's the Jews. Okay, the unvaccinated are the Jews of then. Yeah. Exactly. And when I first saw the, first of all, why do they call them green passports? I mean, give me a break. It's climate change, right? I mean, come on. No. This is not, there's nothing environmental about it. This is a very, very ominous tool. And if you allow it, then that's it. You're cooked. Right now, the model is communist China.
Right.
They're all digitalized. And there they already, now people need to understand, it's not just some of the things that you can imagine that they want to control. They will control your thinking. They already have the technology to do it. They can tell when a child in China is not paying attention to the teacher. Okay? That's the kind of dystopian world. But of course, I think that their plan really, ultimately, it won't be the Chinese. It's really to establish the Fourth Reich. That's what they're really after. It's been bugging them all these years that the Third Reich went down. And some of the players have deep, deep roots to the Nazi period, their own family.
We have a friend that says Germany lost, but the Nazis won.
That's right. Right.
So I do kind of want to jump into this with you. But before we get into the Reich or the Nazism, you said something about depopulation. And mm-hmm. I wanted to kind of give a little bit. Do you mean literal depopulation or do you mean population control? Because those are two different things. And really, within 2 decades, you can control the amount of population just by, you know, maybe herding the availability of people to have babies, and whether it's whether vaccinations are hurting sterilization.
Who decides?
No, my question to you is, do you believe it's depopulation, meaning the vaccinations will literally cause people to die, or do you think that it just will control
it's
the
already,
population?
It's causing infertility. It's causing dead fetuses. Women who get the vaccine in the first trimester, this is all over. They're aborting. So that's the first thing. There's another thing. One of the most amazing things about this whole thing is nobody knows what ingredients are in those injections. The contract that Bibi and Bourla signed 30 years locked up, total secrecy. That's a problem. Just think about it. The doctors and nurses who are injecting this in you and your children, they don't have a clue what they are injecting. That is scary. And there are now scientists all over the world who are starting to examine the vials. They're very hard to get, and what they're finding is horrifying. In other words, material that should never be injected into human beings are found in there.
And in order for people to know that you're not just, you know, somebody who had a great history, a story of a great history, but you're the founder of the Alliance for Human Research Protection, meaning for years you've been entrenched in research. You know doctors. I've watched even a video of you from 8 years ago on the health defense, the defense of health in America, and you were debating the HHS about the consent forms for what they did with babies with some breathing apparatus.
The support study. It's kind of interesting. I was involved for many, many years. It nothing to do with vaccines. But I was kind of pulled into it when I started to look at the evidence. There's a really huge problem with vaccines. They are now the cash cow for pharmaceutical companies, and the private-public partnerships that the government is involved in, which means that there's absolutely no oversight whatsoever. Right. They make the deals. It then becomes regulation according to the dictate of their other contract. I mean, the conflicts of it, financial conflicts of it, are just enormous. The fact that this whole thing is happening, this is a huge, uncontrolled experiment. It's listed at the FDA website as a phase 3 clinical trial. They unleashed it without any safety data. And whatever they knew before from animal studies, not now, now they didn't even bother with animals, was horrific, because other coronavirus vaccines that they tried for more than 20 years, what happened was the animals, the injected animals, at first were fine. But then when they were exposed to the virus or another coronavirus, they died. Their immune system overwhelmed their bodies and they died. And that's the big risk that many scientists are concerned about. Not now, I'm on Zoom.
And we're actually seeing it. We're seeing it happen.
So you see, this is the scale, this is the slightly longer term big risk. There are immediate risks, with some of them you see. Look at the fact that athletes and young adolescents are getting blood clots and heart attack. I mean, inflammation of the heart. Who ever heard of that in a healthy athlete, in young boys? The reports of injuries from COVID-19 are far greater than all the injuries for the last 30 years since the CDC, FDA have been monitoring it. And that only 1% is reported, is counted. Every so often, CDC, they call it data dumping, okay? They withhold for a certain length, and then all of a sudden they disgorge data because, yeah, it is extremely, extremely bad. Until now, when a drug got to market and 53 people died, that drug was pulled immediately. What's the difference now? Why are human lives now cheaper? Why do they have no value? All this is happening because there has been a kind of coup. This is not conspiracy theory. This is it. This is how countries are now being run.
So we're seeing.
I don't know whether, you know, whether democracy was also, you know, an experiment that only lasted, you know, could hold itself up for a certain number of years and now it's dissipating. I don't know. What is true, though, and certainly the American founders knew it, you know, I mean, Benjamin Franklin said, it's the responsibility of every citizen to question authority. That's number one. You don't accept. That's how science is done. There is no end of science. There's no one science.
But it's a backdoor Trojan horse. Again, we're talking about a backdoor Trojan horse, which is called fear, right?
Yeah.
You instill fear into the population and they can no longer ask questions because they're so entrenched with fear that they look for somebody to save them. Vera, I mean, look, we're talking at the moment to a couple hundred people. that, you know, they obviously know. They know your background. They know who you are. They know what's going on. They're keeping their kids away from the school. They're keeping their kids away from these injections. Mm-hmm. If I want to send this to, you know, let's call them a little bit of a sleepy family member.
Yeah.
What could you, you know, with all your life experience and not just the Holocaust, but just in terms of your, you know, you're in the Alliance for Human Research Protection. You've been doing this a long time. You've seen the back end of how hospitals and doctors and researchers work. Sometimes they literally, they're like, they're not human. The amount of experiments that they're able to do on babies and not even blink an eye if these babies die. I mean, you've been seeing this for a long time and now you're just seeing it on a bigger scale. And maybe you could kind of point the attention of somebody who's asleep, who's going to receive this video. What would you tell them to research? Because if I say depopulation, they're going to kick me out the door. If I say Bill Gates, they're going to throw me out the window. What can we point them to?
That's very, you know, and yes. And if somebody, particularly if they're not Jewish, says Holocaust, oh, my God, that's why I have all these, you know, invitations. But no. That shutting off topics, shutting off subjects, shutting off debate is already the clue to tell you you're touching the hot spot. Right. Okay? That's an immediate clue. Why would anybody not want to allow a discussion about something, whatever the topic, whether it's controversial or not, so what? It's only by open discussion and, you know, and you can argue, of course, but that's the way you reach some sort of, you know, knowledge. Otherwise, you're just spinning your wheels. You keep going round and round and round and just listening to your, you know, to the same record. There is no one answer, but to my mind, the most lethal aspect is when medicine, when doctors join forces with government, even more than when doctors join forces with industry. Because with government, you have, at this point, you have a juggernaut between where government and industry are in partnership, so that the doctor joining forces with them, it leaves out, the doctor then really no longer is practicing humanitarian medicine, which focuses on the good of the individual. One of the big lies that has been perpetrated, and the Nazis did it exactly the same way, public health for the greater good, for the good of society, for the good of the folk, they would have said.
For your health, yeah.
Yeah, they wanted their own, the Aryans, to be very healthy, very strong and all that. And that's why you had to get rid of the disabled and the Jews and the gypsies. And right, we were the polluters. And now Israel is treating the unvaccinated as the polluters, when in fact, it's the vaccinated who are shedding and infecting others. It's a replay in unimaginable. Never would I ever have thought that at this stage in my life that, you know, first of all, that I'd be bearing witness again. And this is a bigger horror. This is the entire
world,
human species.
Yeah.
There will, let me be very clear. There will be no rescuers as there were in the Holocaust, okay? Whatever survivors survived, they were rescued by the Allied forces, United States, United Kingdom, and the Soviet Union. There are no rescuer, nobody. That's why people have to rebel now. If they don't do it for themselves, nobody will come to help. Nobody will come to pick up the pieces. This is something people need to understand, that it's that much of a menace, that much of a, yeah, this is a global Holocaust.
It's happening very quickly. And this is what I say to people all the time. It's the fact that there's not going to be any asylum seeking. Every government is doing it to their own population. There's nowhere really to run to. And that's the big fear that I live with. I want to ask you maybe it's kind of more of an opinion than knowledge. Do you think there is a way to fight something that is so big? Do you think there is a way to...
Absolutely. I told you, we are 7.8 billion. Just take to the streets and say no. No, we won't obey.
So civil disobedience.
So they'll have to yes, be. that is the way to do it. You know, no violence, but refuse. People, you know, when people say, oh, but I want to travel and I want to be free and I want to be able to go to, you know, the theater and all that. Yeah, I know. But this is an existential decision.
You know, I don't know if you know, because these things happen in Hebrew and they're on Facebook and they're on. But the rhetoric has gotten so bad against the unvaccinated that doctors are coming out and writing these personal posts about how they'll have no feelings for us if we come to the hospital and get very sick, literally telling us that they're not going to respect us if we come to the hospital sick. And this scares me because, like you said, it's flipped the medical community upside down from caring for your patient to absolutely betraying the patient's health just because of a health decision. And
this is exactly the Nazi playbook. Absolutely the same thing. This, you know, I mean, first it started that Jewish doctors weren't allowed to treat non-Jews, but then it was Jews were not allowed to be anywhere near anything. And that's what this is about. This is an exact replay. I'd like to just add one aspect, you know, about the global great reset.
Right. Klaus Schwab.
Yeah. So the COVID pandemic is really part one of this global great reset, the Agenda 2030, the new world. The great reset has been laid out in detail by Klaus Schwab, head of World Economic Forum. You know, they're the bunch who meet annually in Davos, Switzerland. It's attended by all the global billionaires and heads of state. The goal is to restructure the entire world into a dystopian technocracy, which the globalists market as utopia, Gan Eden. In his book, I want to quote from his book, COVID-19, The Great Reset. This is what he says. He acknowledges that Corona poses no real threat, but it provided a window of opportunity. And I quote, COVID-19 has killed less than 0.006 of the world population. To put this low figure into context in terms of lethality, the Spanish flu killed 2.7 million of the world's population, and HIV/AIDS 0.6 from 1981 till today. The corona pandemic is different. It does not constitute an existential threat or a shock that will leave its imprint on the world's population for decades. The most consequential problems lie in the interlocking of the economic, geopolitical, societal, environmental, and technological risks that will ensue from the pandemic and their ongoing impact on companies and individuals. Okay? So he tells you flat out, it has nothing to do with the virus, has nothing to do with health. We've got big plans, and this fits right in. Now, as we talked, I mean, if they succeed, they will eliminate completely individual freedom and national sovereignty. The globe will be governed by one global, centrally controlled government and financial system. the entire globe population, which they call human assets. Okay? We're a commodity. They'll be under digital surveillance 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Every aspect of life is going to be monitored and controlled. So what does one needs to know that that's what it is. Now, I recommend that people absolutely read COVID-19, The Great Reset, and they should also read Schwab Family Values. This is an investigative report by Johnny Vedlor. It's all on the internet. Schwab Family Values. You need to know the tentacles of Nazism.
Okay. I want to take you, if I may, I just want to, because this is really important for me. So obviously you were very young when the Holocaust started. You talk about being 2 years old when you're sent off to the first camp, and then 6 years old when you're already
3 and a half.
Three and a half. Sorry.
Three and a half.
So obviously you probably didn't know, but maybe you've heard stories from family and stuff like that. Were there what you would consider conspiracy theorists back then trying to warn people, telling people, let's get out? Like, were there the same type of people? And would you know what the percentage was?
I wouldn't know percentages, but I'll tell you, very close. My husband, Yitzchak Zichrono Livracha, died last April, not of COVID.
Sorry.
He was born in Lithuania. And Zev Jabotinsky, he was the one who went all over Eastern Europe to warn the Jews, get out. Get out, get out, it's going to burn. And most Jews did not. They thought, just like, as you said, conspiracy theories, crazy, what, you know, what's he talking about? But for whatever reason, my husband's father took the advice and he picked up and went to Israel. And 10 months later brought the baby, my future husband, and the wife. And and so they did not go through the horror that the rest of the family did. So yes, there were, but again, they weren't listened to.
Yeah, I think it's hard for people to understand that even back then, you know, people had jobs, they had careers, they were doctors, they were teachers, they had businesses. It wasn't like they were just sitting at home and why didn't you pick up your stuff and go? You had to make a very a big decision to pick
it's
up
a
your
huge,
kids.
It's a huge decision, that's right. But that's why we were given free choice. Human beings are supposed to make free choice.
Do you have free choice when you're brainwashed, though?
And I have to tell you that this, okay, I told you about my childhood experience, but I can tell you that recently, during this whole uproar, this upheaval, I discovered that I have a heroine, not a hero, a heroine. I don't think, can you guess?
No.
Okay, Chava, Eve. She disobeyed God, so we have knowledge. She got bored in Gan Eden. There was nothing to do. It was all free, all for nothing. But she wanted more. She wanted to know how things tick. It's a good model. And you know what? It fits with the sort of feminist. But just think about it. Even God can be disobeyed. That's why humans are different. They're supposed to be anyway, but now the programming has really messed things up. Sort of unplugged. The things that should be hardwired are unplugged.
Yeah, there's no truth anymore. There's no... It seems like the truth could change. It's very Orwellian, very, very Orwellian times right now. And I'm talking not so much about you know, about the television set watching you, but the switching of the narrative every 24 to 48 hours, and it's completely different than what the narrative was 2 days ago. And the citizens,
it drives you crazy. This is the way to create psychosis.
Yes, exactly.
This is the way to create psychosis. And there were, still probably are, you know, many psychiatrists who did that. That's how they made their living, by destroying people's lives.
Yeah.
And they were never prosecuted the way some of the doctors at Nuremberg. One was Ewan Cameron. He was president of the American Psychiatric Association and the Canadian Psychiatric and the World Psychiatric, okay? And he spent his time destroying people, depatterning their, so that they were totally destroyed.
I would love to try and bring us kind of into a more maybe, I'm not the most optimistic person, but I would like to leave people with a little bit of optimism. So we say that civil disobedience is probably a great way, both not to be no violence or as least
as possible. Violence, don't need violence. There's one more thing. I'll tell you something else that came up 2 months ago. I was actually in Switzerland. We had a powwow. So that was really nice to get away a little. But what there is a project, which is Cash Friday, which means don't use credit cards on Friday, just cash.
Wow.
Because cash will be the next thing they want to eliminate. And cash is freedom. If you read the head of the World Bank, I think it is, that there's a video of him where he says, with cash, we don't know who's spending the $100 bill or the 1,000 pesos. We need more control. Huh? Yes, digital way is the way they want. They want to create their central Bitcoin or whatever.
Right.
We have to try to use cash. Cash is, it's freedom. They can't detect where it's going, how it's spent, who you gave it to, or what.
Gives you a little bit of sovereignty.
That's right. In other words, bit by bit, let's start taking our world back. I know people got very used to the, I don't know what you really call it in Israel, you know, in other words, where the government takes care of things, the medical.
Like a socialism?
Well, it is really, but you know, the final stop for socialism is the same as fascism. I mean, right. Whether it's communism or Nazism, it's the same thing. It's just a flip of the coin.
Yeah, I say that all the time.
It's about controlling us all. You know, this is look. These are really pathological. You know, these people are
psychopaths.
You wouldn't really want to be in a room with them. I mean, they have absolutely no human emotion, feeling, empathy, nothing. That's what's so scary, because yes, they do not see us as being in any way the same species as they are. They are convinced, and they need constant proof that they are superior. That's what eugenics is about. I mean, they complained about overpopulation in 1913.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely do. I definitely do want people to start getting into that subject a little bit more. I did a whole 1 hour documentary about Bill Gates and his family. I won't get into it, obviously, but his family runs back about 120 years with eugenics, with the Rockefellers, Margaret Sanger and Planned Parenthood. And it's very hard for people to swallow because,
Israelis have had some policies that are eugenics also.
Yes. Yeah, 100%.
No, it's very important. Listen, I don't accept chosen people. That's what starts it. Chosen what? First of all, of course, when you realize what we've been chosen for, I can tell you that, no, you don't really want to be chosen like that. But the point is that if you begin by separating humans into the chosen and the unwanted and the, you know, discarded, that's when you get this where we are now. If people would respect one another as human beings with different, you know, different styles, different religions, different way of living, so what? That's the beauty.
You've said this before, and I say it in Hebrew all the time. When you don't respect the rights of an individual, you cannot respect the rights of society, right?
Absolutely. And what kind of a society? If you've got miserable, you know, individuals who are miserable, then what kind of a society is that? That's a big lie. Again, that's one of the biggest lies of public health.
Yeah.
They justify disregarding the individual, sacrificing, and for the greater good. No, there's no greater good. There's no greater good. The Greeks understood it right. You know something? The Greeks really held doctors, they held their feet to the fire. Before the Greeks allowed a student to enter their medical school, that's when they had to swear that they would never use what they would learn in school to do harm. That's never been in the West. At most, it was a graduation thing after they already learned the secrets. It's useless. But they said, the other thing is that before medicine became so totally embroiled with pharmaceutical industry, you know, medicines used to carry a skull and bones as poison. And it was regarded that doctors knew the magic dose to give so that it wouldn't poison you. But they understood that the thing itself, whether it was a potion or a pill, was poison. That's a much better way to look at medicine. It's poison. You have to be careful. You have to know what you're doing. But it's now, they package some things like jelly beans so the children should. It's outrageous.
There's actually a medical term. When you look at the medical terms for new chemicals that they're bringing or new, call it new experimental drugs or whatever, they are called poisons in the medical term. Yeah,
they are. That's their genesis, you know. Yeah. And the thing is how, but okay. And with vaccines, we've got big problems because you don't know what's in it. And this, you absolutely don't know. Why is it that it's so hidden? Why is it so concealed? Why is there such a secrecy? And why does everyone involved with the COVID injections, manufacturers, the doctors, the public, everybody who's involved, the distributors, total and complete immunity from liability for harm? To what degree does the Israeli public, do they realize that? I mean, why is this given? Because they know that a lot of people are going to be harmed, and they don't want to pay for it.
There's a cognitive dissonance that is almost impossible to penetrate at the moment, especially after they've taken the shot, because they have to, keep themselves in check, you know. They don't want to tell themselves, I got this shot, and then wake up and say, why did I do this? And then they have to live with this fear.
I know, it's hard to, but you know, that's part of being an adult. I'd rather make my own mistakes, and I've made plenty. If you live, you've made mistakes, but you learn from them. And when you totally suspend your right to make your own, then you have nobody to blame. I know that that's what happened, but this was very calculated. There are, in fact, documents from the UK, the SAGE, I don't know if they call it a committee or commission, whatever. They're in charge of preparedness for pandemics and things. And they have these three sub-committees, and it's very interesting. They laid out how to inculcate fear. That was a whole committee wrote up a blueprint of how to inculcate fear in the public so that they would do whatever would tell them. It's very, very calculated. This is not, you know, and no virus had anything to do with it. 100%. Whatever it is, virus or whatever it is, really, it was genetically engineered in the laboratory to be more lethal.
And to be the catalyst for this, whatever it is that they're planning for.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when I say we, I'm talking about the friends, I'm talking about the people who are awake, I'm talking about the protesters that do show up. Other than the fact that we feel extremely, extremely denounced from society, it's getting really bad. It really is getting really bad. And it's amazing to see how many people have this fascism within them probably didn't even know. And again, I try to be extremely empathetic, and I try to put myself in their shoes, and I say, okay, what would I do if I feared, you know, if I was living in this fear, and I believe the pharma and I believe my government, and these people are not going out to get vaccinated to protect me. Doesn't matter how stupid that sounds. I'm really trying to understand how we can go about awakening as much as possible. And there's people who will never be able to awaken.
Look, after all, many of us for many decades, the Germans, how could the German people, how could that happen? How could they allow that to happen? How come they didn't rebel? How come they didn't? Okay, now we're seeing exactly how come.
Yeah.
But you see, this is another lesson that Israelis need to learn. I now feel closer to some of the Germans that I've come into contact with. The third generation, and it took three generations, has really come to terms with their history, with the guilt and the whole thing. And that's why they're, again, leading this. What happened there was when grandchild asked the grandparent, where were you? Where were you when that happened?
How will we answer? Yeah, that's what keeps me, strong every day. So, you know, I think about my daughter turning 15 and asking me, you know, where were you? Now that I have no freedoms, I have no sovereignty on my body.
I know. Look, there are others, you know, in history who also, you know, were tried by terrible circumstances. You know, there was the Inquisition, there were all kinds of things. You know, the human species, even though I pay attention just to the individual, not the crowd, not the mess. And you have to try to, I know it's very hard to convince those who, as you say, they don't want to realize, oh my God, did I do this wrong? Of course, they would be well advised to see a doctor who doesn't vaccinate and is, you know, and has a protocol that helps. There are curatives that talk about that. Like, why are the governments forbidding doctors from using FDA licensed medications that cure?
Yes. Yes.
Look at Africa. I sent, you can post those things. Look at Africa. Ivermectin, it's totally green.
Yeah, 100%.
And you know, in the United States, by the way, I don't know what's the latest is in terms, since they also have tightened the noose. But in the beginning of August, 49% of Americans did not get the vaccine. And 75% of Blacks did not take the vaccine.
They have a natural distrust.
No matter what, how much pressure is being put on them. No, because, you know, this is interesting. And it's a gut thing. Black Americans have Tuskegee in their DNA.
Yeah.
They won't forget. And whenever I speak to a Black audience, I tell them, hold on to that. That's your strongest defense because you're right. It never stopped. And unfortunately, the Jewish people didn't understand that.
It's not just jumping because out at
right me. Now Jews are not yet singled out. I mean, hey, wait, you know, this isn't over yet, right?
It's a marathon.
And it's very, very troubling how it's more than going like sheep. I mean, this is really willful ignorance is what I call it. And I call any educated person who shields himself with willful ignorance is committing a crime.
And then maybe you can kind of put out a message, because again, whoever sees this now is one thing. It's another thing when it comes out into the ether on full scale, and we'll cut it up also into pieces. If you could please, Vera, what can you tell to mothers, not only mothers that are doing this out of thinking that it's healthy for their child, but what about a child that's 14 years old looking at his mother and saying, look, all my friends are vaccinated. They're all going to the restaurant.
I know.
I can't go. That hurts. You know, I have my daughter.
All right. Let me just remind you of something. Not with vaccines. Okay. But it's very similar. There was big campaign, Gerber and a few of the others, to stop having mothers breastfeed.
Wow.
By formula, right? And they went especially, well, of course, they did it all over in the West. And this is during the time I had children. But of course, in Africa, it was like it was a death sentence, because if you have polluted water, you know, sewered water, and that's what you're giving the child instead of the mother's milk, that's what they're capable of, you see. They need to understand. And those mothers didn't know any better, but until they did, and then they stopped, you know, because that kind of stopped. But for one generation, that's what they were doing. That was a way to kill. Formula with dirty water. I think one of the other things, and I've said this to others, is that most people cannot imagine. They cannot imagine evil.
Exactly.
They can't imagine someone who is really evil, because they're not. Most people are not evil. But we need to understand that there are evil people. Just we have to look at what they're preaching and what their record shows, what they've done. Bill Gates was very, you know, he said it right in an interview on major television. The only solution to COVID is the final solution.
Yeah.
Is a vaccine. He knew what he was talking about. He's done these things before.
I have this question because I'd like your opinion on this. Why do you think, it's just a sick play on us, like, to have Israel being the absolute most central part of this whole experiment? I mean, do you think it's actually like a sick, demented game that they're playing?
It might be darker than that. Think about it. You're all in one congested area. Everything is possible. Listen, everything should be on the table. They look to what degree they've gone, to what extent, you know, how. So there are probably different versions of the vaccines. I don't just mean the names. I mean the unnamed.
Batches.
Some get placebo. That's if you're lucky. Some get, because they are doing multiple tests. They've got this huge population, you know, prisoners. And they're testing out different ingredients, different formulations, different concoctions. And that's why you also have some people you know, immediately within a day, and others 2 weeks later. This is not by chance. You see, in nature, none of this happens this way. This is not a disease. This is a bioweapon. This is a bioweapon. That's what that research was. The euphemism, gain of function. Okay? Well, the Nazis, when they said, you know, T4, that was for special treatment. We didn't talk about T4. That was the pivotal project that enabled the Holocaust, actually. The gassing and all that was tested during T4. Six hospitals became killing centers. How's that? Well, in March, the nursing homes in all of Western Europe, America, Canada, Israel, yeah, they emptied out the nursing homes by issuing directives not to treat them. In the UK, what came out recently, there's a lawsuit. They ordered huge amounts of a drug, I can't pronounce it, but it's used in executions in the United States, okay? And that's what they're using. And then the vaccine, the same thing, the first ones with the nursing homes. Gibraltar was like decimated. This is as evil as it gets. And everyone has to be a partisan if that's what it takes. I mean, hey, look at some of your heroic history. Try to draw on that. Try to remind people this isn't, you know, we are in a terrible era right now. But it wasn't always, I mean, there were hardships. Something happened where Israelis really lost sight of the human. I mean, what can I say? It's the human. You got really, really, really enamored with technology. All your bright people went into technology.
A lot of people say that the over obedience that we're witnessing in Israel has a lot to do with the army, because we have mandatory.
Maybe
have mandatory.
I know this much. My husband was an officer actually in the army, and he told me about some incidents where he was only afraid that somebody will shoot the Arab that they, you know, caught and were taking back. Because he didn't want anything like that on his watch. But yeah, they're trigger happy. There are all kinds of things in the army. And yeah, the army, I used to think that it has a positive effect by getting, teenagers essentially to grow up, to have responsibility. And that was the positive. But yes, this business of authority, which is the same in medicine, you don't question authority. That is the worst thing for a society.
Right.
That's the worst thing.
That's so indoctrination. So
it becomes a double-edged sword.
Yeah, sword.
But, you know, you've had experiments that the kibbutz, wonderful idea on paper and all that, right? And then the immigrants came who didn't want it. They wanted their own little plot. They didn't want to be told what to do, you know? I mean, and a lot of the children who grew up, especially in Kibbutz HaMeuchad and in Shomer HaTzair, they didn't bond. They were with they had the children's homes, right?
Right.
It's not the same thing. When a little child wakes up in the middle of the night with whatever, they want mommy, Ima.
100%.
They don't want but they didn't get it. Right. So, that's one thing that's, I think, very wrong.
Yeah, Jacob talks about it a lot because he lives on a kibbutz, and he talks about the paradoxity that he's feeling at the moment, where it's like it's almost even worse within the kibbutz, within Israel.
I bet, because the pressure, if everybody, yeah. You know, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's one of the things. I spent time, 6 months on kibbutz when I was 18. And so I know, and I knew then I've had a great time, you know, at 18, you know, it's great. But I knew I wouldn't want to be told what to do, where yeah. I could work, what I could, you know, that was not for me. So yeah, I'm an individual, but that's something that everyone should be. That's really, I don't have a formula or, you know, a step-by-step do this, then that'll yeah. happen. No, part of it, look, actually, one of the reasons that they are so after gaining control of humanity is because they know, and this shows you, it's very easy to get control over a crowd. Very easy. They've done it. But it's those individuals who refuse to, that's what's killing them. That's what's killing them. They have to get control over us by hook or by crook. Because they can't convince us. Their methods of persuasion, even exactly. torturous ones, are not working.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like 20%, like we've already talked about it. It's the exit of Egypt. It's the people who exited Germany. It's the people who exited. It's about 20 versus 80%, where there's these people who are not, they're not able to be brainwashed. They're not
well,
able.
Well, that's the ones, that's the ones that that's you have hardcore. To really, that's the ones that should be leading. Because they won't let you astray. But as Dr. Zev Zelenko mentioned, he said, well, you know, only 10% of Jews left Egypt.
Ah, okay. So
the other 90% okay. stayed. Yeah. And even so, think about it, even so, they were not allowed to come to the promised land. He had to get rid of that whole slave mentality.
Right. Right. Good point.
New leaf. You know, yeah. I mean, you can't be a slave and be free at the same time.
Right. Very good point. Never thought about it that way.
Yeah, that's what 40 years. I mean, imagine 40 years. And it's a desert, but it's not that big. Yeah. Must have had him go around in, you know, circles. But because they weren't independent thinkers. He wanted strong people. Anyway, this is that we are at this point now is, yeah, it's a horror. And Israel is like, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's, well, it is, I'm surprised though that Israel didn't think, you know, that when Bibi signed off the population to be the guinea pigs and he prided himself, oh, they're the world's lab. That's how he referred to Israel, the world's lab. Didn't anyone think, hey, Bibi, how much did you get for this deal? 200 million? 300 million? How much? That's the kind of money we're talking about. We're not talking about 1, 2, 3, no. That's just to give you an idea of how these oligarchs, why they need so much money. It's not for living expenses. It's for the power of being able to bribe anybody. The entire, you know, all heads of state. And the ones that didn't, there have been already 4 or 5 assassins.
In Africa.
Just yeah. by chance, I know.
Yeah. And one of ours over here with Shasha Biton, I don't know if you know, but Shasha Biton, she's the Ministry of Education, and she was very much against doing the vaccinations inside the school.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, her personal her personal helper, or I don't remember what it's called, a personal
assistant,
whatever. Sort of, yeah. He was murdered in front of his house, and 2 days later, she changed her tune. So. 2 days later, she's standing right beside 2 soldiers and she says, you know, we really need to start vaccinating the kids. After for a year, she was called an anti-vaxxer because she stood up against doing this. And then so he was murdered and right in front of his house. Really bad. A lot of shots. Well,
this is how you maintain terror. This is exactly how the Nazis did it and Soviets. This is how you know,
I can't say 100% that that's what it was. I just say it's a crazy coincidence. Crazy coincidence.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But we're the many. You see, this is why I say the only way is to get many. It's the massive crowd that they can't deal with that. Even if they can't do it. They can't. And they know it. Now, remember, there's another reason why they are in such a frenzy right now to vaccinate. Whoever is unvaccinated
is
a control.
Yeah.
You see, and that's where the danger lies, because sooner or later, the others will start realizing, wait a minute, the vaccinated are the ones who are hospitalized, right? And the others, nothing seems to happen to them.
Yeah, we've talked about that a lot. You know, I can't imagine how hard this conversation might have been for you. I know you thought about it a few times, because you kind of have this feeling with Israel and the fact that you're probably very disappointed. And I want to thank you again for coming in and giving us some of your knowledge and giving us some of your spirit and your thoughts. I think it's very important. I think people need to hear your voice a lot more. And we'll do a job here and subtitle everything that you've said. We'll cut it up into stories. We'll obviously send it to you as well. Kind of like last message you want to give to the Israeli, maybe especially the mothers. I think the mothers need you more than anything.
Mothers need, the mothers have to really be the ones. And, you know, in historically, the mothers were the ones who stood up to whatever evil power. And they need to really trust themselves. Don't listen to the authorities, because they're in it for different reasons. They really, I mean, imagine, even those in the Israeli health ministry, they don't know what's in the vaccine. Well, these aren't really vaccines, but whatever, but they're injectables. They don't even know. They're all going by, you know, by lists, by pieces of paper that tell them safe and effective, next, safe and effective. I mean, it's go back to your very basic human instinct. Trust your instinct. That's what I tell people. I trust individuals to be reasonable, to be good, because look, they have everything to lose. One of the problems is everybody's been led to think that as if something is manufactured, it's superior to something that's growing on a tree. And it's exactly the opposite. What people need is more of nature's things. But I would say, really, watch a lion, watch a cat, watch an elephant, any one of these. You see how they care for their babies. They're not led astray. It's too much conformity. And that's, and you know what? Throw away the television.
100%.
No, really, the news is all, I mean, I can tell you it. Look, the fact is, though, I do feel angry at them, because damn it, how do I find things? I find sources of information. You find sources. They're there. They're a little bit harder to get to. Yes, that's true. So what? You have to take only what the major, you know, sent is giving you. This, it's the same script. I mean, if they even change channels, it makes no difference. It's the same script. They're reading the same news. Why wouldn't you want to dig a little bit? That, you know, this is not having to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. This is really, you can click, click, and get to the thing, you know, get to genuine scientists, get to doctors. Why is someone like Michael Yeer done? He was the chief scientist at Pfizer, vice president, 40 years vaccines. And he's pleading with people, do not take the shot, do not.
Yeah, Peter McCullough, Robert Malone. I mean, so many great doctors that are just high level. Even Garrett something that used to work for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Those who know anything about this are saying, "Don't go near it."
Yeah. Why? Well, they'll never be heard on the mainstream, though.
Well, you know, but they are there, and you know, the internet's full of them.
Yeah.
They're being interviewed all over. They're writing it.
Vera, I can't thank you enough. I'm really flabbergasted that I got to speak with you in general, just as two individuals, other than the fact that this is kind of like an interview for a lot of people. I appreciate your work. Like I said, I've done some research on you, and I really appreciate your work and what you've done. I'd like to give maybe Jacob a chance to say thank you, and I'd like to say thank you myself, and I'm sure everybody else at home is thanking you for your time. And really, thank you very much. I wish I could give you a hug. Jacob, Vera, would you like to? Thank you.
Vera, thank you very much. For me, I think it was the most important talk we ever done. And I think the most important one that we done. People here in Israel need to listen to you, to your voice. Sometimes for us as Israelis, we've been in the army officer, and with all, we want to know that we are doing everything in the best way, but it seems that we are doing something wrong, and we need to open our eyes and ears and listen to somebody like you. In the end of this talk, we want to take a tapuach with vash, an apple with the honey. Yes, and we felt if we will do it or not. And we said, you know, sometimes like after Memorial Day, there is Independent Days. And this talk is very like, I feel that it's hard for me to breathe. And we asked the people to have an apple and honey, that even in these hard times, and there is seems that so much darkness here, we feel you like a big light here for us. So I wish to you all the best. We thank you for all what you are doing for us. It's very hard for me to express in English. I'm thinking in Hebrew, I'm translating my words during I'm talking with you. And I really believe that you are doing a change, and you are helping us to do here in Israel a change, and to more and more lights are opening. So we will finish with a blessing. We wish you all the best, and all of you, כולם פה בבקשה, אם יש לכם תפוח בדבש, אני הכנתי תפוח קטן בדבש, ואני מאחל לכולנו שתהיה לנו שנה מתוקה ומוארת, ובזכות אנשים כמו ורה, נדע להעריך את הטוב שיש פה, ולשמר אותו, ולהגדיל את האור. אז שנה טובה לכולם.
שנה טובה לכולם.
תודה רבה רבה רבה. תודה.
שנהיה חופשים. שנה הבאה חופש.
Amen.
Amen. Vera, toda.
Vera, thank you so much.
Thank you. Toda.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.